Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Simple Actions Big Book Step Study Workshop. We have our guests. Can't hear me? Okay, thank you for telling me. I know, so stay on me about it, okay? thanks for being here with us tonight. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book Study Workshop. We'll be meeting tonight. We're going to go through 1 through 4, and tomorrow morning we'll start at 9:15 and start with 5 and finish with 12 about 2:30. There'll be a potluck in the middle tomorrow, so don't worry. There'll be food and coffee. And so we're going to start our time together tonight with the Serenity Prayer, if you'll do that with me. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
My name is Judy, and I am an alcoholic.
Judy. Hey, Judy.
So tonight we have Christy E. and Sammy G. from Richmond, who are going to lead us in this workshop over the next evening and day. And I'm just going to read you a little bit about our group. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to everybody here in attendance tonight. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room, the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow us to listen uninterrupted. The group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. I'll now read the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting, as I said, is an open big book study, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce our speakers and let them take over.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sammy Griffin. Boy, I heard myself a lot. I'm Sammy Griffin. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September 1st, 1989. And it's through people like you and a sponsor who loved me enough until I could learn to love you and a God of my understanding. I'm very grateful to be here tonight. It's a privilege to be here with you all tonight, and also it's a privilege to be with Christy. This is the first time that we've been doing something like this, so we're both excited. I want to first tell y'all that I'm not an expert on anything except for how I've stayed sober. And years ago, I was called a big book thumper, and I thought it was a compliment. I didn't take it as an insult. I was very fortunate when I first got sober that I got into a group of people and a sponsor who believed in the big book, who believed in God, and believed in that my life was, I was on a fatal mission if I didn't do something. This is a fatal disease. And so I was very fortunate at first. I didn't know any better. We'll tell you, I've never relapsed. You know, I've only picked up one white chip, and I used to be embarrassed about that at the beginning because everybody seemed to relapse, and I was jealous because they were getting more attention than I was. But I will tell you, though, that I'm glad. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be sober. Let me tell you, I'm glad to be happy and sober because I think that's a big, I'm just not sober. You know, tell your face you're happy because of the process that we're going to be going through, my life has changed. It's a different life that I lead today. I have changed. You know, through God's help and you people, my life looks different and is different. At the beginning of the book, the very beginning of the big book, it tells us the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered. It's a past tense. A lot of people have a trouble with that, you know, and I'm not here to fight over words because I have ceased fighting anything or anybody. I don't really care. But what I have recovered from is a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I am not hopeless or helpless today. I was, and I've recovered from that. When something comes up today, I don't go back into no hope. I just don't, because I have recovered from that. And the way I have recovered from that is through these steps. It tells me at the very end that I'm going to have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That means I've had to do something about it, that I had to get to that point for my heart to have changed, for my heart to have gone, oh, something's different. You know that feeling that all of a sudden you're not reacting the same way? Or you keeping your mouth shut is the best thing that I've learned to do. It's a great experience. So from the very beginning, the first line in the book is how we have recovered, is the first hope that I got. I've been practicing these principles without even me knowing it. You know, so I've been having that hope from the very beginning. Down the road, we're going to talk about the triangle. What I did tonight is this is the original first edition. So if you're eating or anything, just be careful with it. This is the original first edition and the second edition and the third edition. And what Christy and I were going to talk about eventually is the triangle. Because in the first and second and half of the third edition, the emblem is in there. We still use it, but they're taking it out of the pamphlets eventually. And, well, you know, in 1996, we, you know, gave that up. We don't fight anything or anyone, and that's what it was going to be. So we don't have that emblem in our half of the third edition and, of course, in the fourth edition. So, but eventually we're going to be talking about that. I came to you people pretty hopeless and helpless, but also powerful. I was very powerful. I thought I could control the situation. You know, the first step tells me that I'm powerless. And I didn't understand that when I got sober. What does that mean? You know, I'm Superwoman. I got a super cape on. I always landed on my feet, whether I had seizures, whether I couldn't keep a job, whether I lost my family. Well, anything, I still thought I could control the situation until I couldn't. I can't tell you the day that it's going to happen for you or you share the same story. I didn't look at my watch and say, what a great day to get sober. That didn't happen. What happened is I was intervened by God and I was available for it. Somehow, something happened and I became available for that. The first step tells me that I'm powerless over alcohol. Now, I'm powerless over alcohol two different ways. I'm powerless over alcohol physically. We know in the doctor's opinion, it tells me that I have an allergy to this thing. Everybody knows what an allergy is. It's a, you know, an abnormal reaction to food or drink. And so for normal people, if you were allergic to strawberries, you would not eat strawberries because you break out in hives and all this rash and, you know, it's kind of ugly and you get sick. Well, if you're allergic to strawberries, would you kind of have a strawberry shortcake? Would you hide your strawberries in a strawberry daiquiri? Would we dress it up differently not to have it? I was so powerless, I tried many ways to be able to drink safely. So anytime I put any alcohol in my body, in any form at all, as it talks about in the big book, in any form, what does any form look like to you? Any form was of alcohol that looked like, for me, is if I had a glass of water and I took an eyedropper and I put Jack Daniels, you know, a couple of drops into that glass of water, would that be constituted as drinking? That's what near beer is, you know. I won't try to get on too many controversial things here. But for me, my sponsor told me that I was the only one responsible for my sobriety. So it talks about, you know, in any form at all. So so I'm powerless over it. Once I put alcohol into my body, something happens that doesn't happen to the moderate drinker or really to the heavy drinker. Something happened to me once I put it in. I had to have more. I don't know where I was going to wake up the next day. I don't know how many drinks that took. You know, I don't know, you know, what I was going to do. Sometimes I got away with having two or three drinks, you know, to confirm that I'm not an alcoholic or to confirm that I can do this safely. But what happened to me is something happened once I took that drink that I didn't know. I couldn't explain it. You know, when I got to you people, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know that my body was allergic. And it talks about it in, if y'all, I don't know if y'all brought your big book with you, but it talks about how, let me just find out exactly what. It's in Doctor's Opinion. Talks about the allergy. Dr. Silkworth wrote two letters to us, and he said in that the physician who at our request gave this letter, this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views about another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic must believe, torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic, that the body is quite as abnormal as his mind. I didn't know that. I didn't know that the alcohol, I was allergic to it. And once I put it into my system, something happened. And it says that in our belief, in my belief, because I make this book very personal to me, in my belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. So it's telling me how important it is for me to concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. I have to concede that. So, you know, when I first got sober, I will tell you that everything that my sponsor told me and that we read in this book was way over my head. It was so over my head that I just thought y'all were fanatics. You know, that I just couldn't concede to that. Didn't mean I picked up a drink. What it meant that I had to learn to concede to my innermost self. That word learned is in front of there. I didn't know. So if, you know, if you're confused or anything, it's a learning process, and it was for me. So I'm glad he put that word. I had to learn to concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. So if I leave out that picture, you know, that I'm physically sick, you know, then I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. The second part of it is that I'm powerless over it besides physically, mentally. And this book is laid out so great. It talks about the physical part all up until page 23 in this book. And then when you hit 23, it says, if you turn to 23, it says, these observations, and that's all about our drinking stories, would be academic and pointless if our friend never took that first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. So at this point in the book, he's going to talk about this. Because see, and it's really in the triangle too. And I'm going to talk about the triangle because we come in and the first part of the triangle is unity. I have to have you. Oh my God, I don't want you, but I got to have you. And it talks about it, and there is a solution that if I'm on a ship and it's going down, I don't care if you're sitting with the captain or you're shoveling coal, you're going down. You know, it's not prejudice. I don't care how rich you are, how poor you are, how fat you are, how skinny you are, how white you are, how black you are, you're going down. So that's that. I need the fellowship now. I need that unity with you and I. And it's a threefold disease. So in the unity and the fellowship side, it talks about the body. And that's what we're talking about here. The body is sick and we need to bring it to people because that's where God speaks through, is us. Then we're going to get to the mind, which is the program of recovery. It's the recovery, which is the program, which is this. It's nothing else. It's not your program. It's not what my opinion, it's the program of recovery. And so what the program in recovery does is treats this. It treats this. And the third part of the triangle is the service. That's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic where no one else can help. So in other words, I have to have all three in order for me to recover from this. Now, I see people coming in and they just do fellowshipping. Woohoo, let's go to the movies, forget the meeting. You know, we're hanging out, we'll do well. And they forget about the other, you know, the body, the mind, and the spirit, because it's a threefold disease, which we have to take care of. So now that I'm powerless over it physically, I'm powerless over it mentally, too, because the main problem centers here. How come when I'm bone dry, I don't even have a drop of liquor in me, knowing all the trouble that it caused me, all the humiliation that I went through, all that, why do I pick up a drink? It's the crux of our problem. That is the problem. So I need to be treated right here. And what treats me is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It told me that I picked up a drink because I was irritable, restless, and discontent. Well, what is irritable? Angry. I'm just angry. And I'm restless. You know, irritable, I've got anxiety. I'm restless. What is restless? What is that? Where does that help me? And I'm discontented. I'm never satisfied. I don't have enough of whatever. I just don't have enough. So when I get irritable and restless and discontent, I'm going to pick up the drink because I need some ease and comfort. Part of my story that I tell is my dad got sick. And this is true powerlessness. My dad, who I loved very much, loved him with all my heart. He was dying from mesothelioma. And I go out to Houston, Texas to help my mom there and, you know, send her back because she had been in the room with my dad. And, you know, he was aphasic. He couldn't talk. And someone had to stay with him. So my mom needed a break. So, you know, we sent her back to Norfolk here because that's where I'm from. And I stayed with my dad. I went there. The first day I go in there, I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. I don't even know I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. And I looked at my dad and I said to him, I'll be right back. Well, I didn't go back for 5 days. And my dad was dying. But you know what happened? I was thirsty. I was irritable, restless, and discontent. And I needed some ease and comfort, which I saw other people taking with impunity. And I'm quoting the book. You know, because this is the spree that this book talks about all through. And I'm going through that spree. And I'm feeling that irritable, restless, and discontent. And I had to get some ease. And I didn't know that. I didn't know. I didn't know that the first drink got me drunk. So I went out and had that to get that ease and comfort. And what happens, the book says, that we come to feeling remorse, guilt, shame. It's an awful feeling when you go back to the people that love you so much and they give you that look like, where have you been? What are you doing? You're supposed to be here helping me. You know, and what do? Because I can't take that because now I'm starting to stuff all those feelings down that I don't want to feel. I go out and have another drink. And I don't go back to the hospital room for 2 more days. Because see, I can't take that one drink, which I keep telling to myself that I can, because I'm powerless. I'm powerless over it. And my dad died, and I wasn't there to say goodbye to him. I wasn't there. That's alcoholism at its finest. That's pure powerlessness, because I drank when I didn't want to. I drank when I had good reasons not to, and I picked up the drink. I'm totally powerless over it. And I don't know that. See, all I can do is now make excuses because it's hard to live with yourself on some of the decisions. Alcohol made all my decisions for me. Everything I did was based on alcohol, when I was going to get it, how was it I was going to get it. And then by the end of my alcoholism, I drank alone. I couldn't even go to bars. I couldn't even go anywhere because I couldn't even let people see how much I drank and how I drank. So being powerless is, when I got here, I conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And if I'm powerless, which was a little hard for me to get, then my sponsor told me, I better tap into a power that's going to take care of me. And there's step two. And that's what I did. I didn't have a God. And the big book tells me, I can quote this big book. I know every word in this big book. And that's not going to keep me sober. Because unless I enlarge upon my spiritual life, all this means nothing. But what happened to me when I came to this part about I can't do it, I better find something that can. And my sponsor said, that's going to be God. It's not going to be a light bulb. It's not going to go hug a tree. It's not going to be anything. And believe me, I heard those things when I got sober. You know, let it be a light bulb. You know, I understood like it could be a group, you know, in good orderly direction and things like that. But my sponsor said, it's going to be God. And I said, okay. I didn't have neither a good or a bad feeling about that. I said, okay. So the big book tells me it doesn't matter where you start. You can start at the simplest level. You know, they say that a mustard seed is the smallest seed and it grows the largest tree. Well, that's all the willingness I had to come to believe was that of a mustard seed. And my faith was going to grow. I love this part in the big book when it says about the realm of the spirit and the realm of the material. We will believe in the realm of the material like that. We believe in electricity. Of course we do. You know, I can go turn that on and off and light comes on. I don't question it. I don't go, where did that come from? Wonder how those wires were, you know, put together and how does that work? I don't question it. I remember, and it says in here too that, you know, we don't want to throw away the old for something new that works. And I love that because in my day, I remember when the microwave first came in. And I told myself, I ain't doing that. I'm not doing something that, you know, and everybody's, oh my gosh, it's great. It works faster. It's better. No, not me. I don't want to try anything new. And I still have a little of that in me today. It's just so hard. And it says that we won't discard something old that works better. You know, and when my sponsor described it that way to me, I'm like, you know, that made sense to me. You know, that I need to throw my old ideas away for something new that does. At this point in the big book, when it starts talking about this God of my understanding, it starts talking about my attitude. It starts talking about I need a new attitude. I need a new relationship. I need so a new light can come in on me. I remember my sponsor said this to me because I cried about everything, you know. And she never said to me, stop feeling that or don't think that or don't do that. What she said to me is, and she was quoting the book, Sammy, why don't you set aside, just set all your ideas and your emotions and your attitudes aside so a new set of conceptions and motives can come in. And I said, I can do that. I can do that. I can set that aside. My family, they hate me. Well, that may be true. Why don't you set it aside? You know, I hate that woman over there. That may be true, but why don't you set it aside and go hold hands with her during the Lord's Prayer? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I just told you I hated her. Why don't I want to do that? That don't make sense. But what she was teaching me was setting some of these old ideas aside. Doesn't mean that I can't feel it and do it. You can do anything on it. She told me I can chew it up, spit it out. You can do it anything, swallow it. But you're going to hear it. You're going to hear a new way to do something. So I can have a new pair of glasses on. So I can have a new attitude towards my fellows, toward God and His universe. Because my attitude, I had a bad attitude. I had a bad attitude about people, about places, about everything. I wore this badge of like an entitlement, and I don't even know where that came from. I had developed it over years of hard work. I had developed my personality. It took a lot to develop that. And I'm going to tell you all, if you're new here, it takes time to undo some of those things, you know. But all they're asking us to do is those three essential things: to be willing, to be honest, and to be open. And for me personally, I thought the second step was all about telling the truth. I did. I thought that if I just tell the truth, my life would look different. And in reality, that's what Bill Wilson actually wrote that about when he was going to restore us to sanity. That if we start doing the next right thing, telling the truth, your life will look different. And I said to my sponsor, I said, gosh, you know, I lie so much that, you know, it became my truth. You know, I lied so much out there. I said I was mugged when I was never mugged, you know. And God forgive me, I said to men that I was pregnant and I was never pregnant. I lied and manipulated to get this. And I used to tell her, how am I ever going to start telling the truth? And she goes, when you just start practicing it, you know, because a lie always looked better than the truth to me. And see, today it's so opposite. It's so easy just to tell the truth. You know, it was harder to lie because I had to remember. And it was tough because I couldn't remember, you know. So sanity to me was telling the truth. Mm-hmm. I have to stop because my time's up. Boy, I could talk for hours on that. No.
Seriously.
Thank you. Ba-boom.
Oh. I'm just sitting here listening. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Christy Ellis.
Hey, Christy.
And thank you. This is so fun for us.
I know.
We've been friends for a long time. And anyway, happy, happy Friday. I can't think of anywhere I'd rather be than with you wonderful people. It's great to be with you because you are my people. My sobriety date's April 12th, 1988. I have a home group. It's the Awakenings group, and we meet on Sunday mornings at 9:30. It's an open speaker meeting. We even have babysitting, which is nice. They didn't have that when I came around. It's really been a nice thing to offer folks with really small children. And I have a sponsor that I call my tour guide, and I do use her, and I just talked to her yesterday. And I've got sponsees that are anchors in my life, and I can promise you they help me a lot more than I help them. They seem to think I do, but it's not true. And it's great to be with you lovely people. I love this book, and Sammy and I, you know, we were talking as we were driving down about how, you know, we just, you know, came up in AA, you know, with the big book, you know, this is the deal, this is what you do. And so, you know, I'd say ditto on everything she said, and then I'm going to talk about, we'll talk about different pieces because there's so much in this book. And I'm going to back up a little bit because, and I know she probably did this on purpose, and because when you get to talk first, you get to tell everything. But no, she wouldn't do that. But what I would say is, you know, it was really neat for me, and I wouldn't know this if I hadn't gone through the book with a sponsor. I mean, I don't know how to do anything. I mean, I still need, you know, direction, and I need adult supervision, you know. And I just really do because, I mean, I really don't. I mean, I'm 26 years sober. I don't know what it's like to be 27. You know, and I need that, and I hope that I always feel like that. And, you know, and as far as a home group goes, I hope I never think I'm too good to greet or make coffee at my home group. You know, those are things that are, it's important to me because that's the stuff that when I got sober that hooked me in, and for the first time I started feeling a little value and a little part of, you know, and it helped me until I started going through the steps, you know, and I fell into with busy people, which is very helpful. And I was very blessed. This is my, I only have one white chip too, I'm happy to say. And I was the same way. Because people would go, they'd almost act like I had, that they'd had it a lot worse. And I just said, I just did all my relapsing before I got here. You know, I mean, it just, if I'd learned about AA 10 years prior, I would have been picking up a bunch of white chips. You know, but I didn't. I found it when it was time for me to find it. And I'll get into the first step in a second. What I like about the book is a lot of, you know, because I was, you know, I know we both were, you know, the book starts in the, you know, this page here, it just says Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and my book's really written, and I've used this and sat with a lot of women and gone through, I can hear myself, gone through this book with a lot of ladies. But what I like about it is every part of it's important. I love the preface. I love at the last paragraph when it talks about if you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in reading one of the 42 personal stories and think, yes, that happened to me, Or more important, yes, I felt like that. Or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. I mean, even before it gets into the doctor's opinion, I mean, it's talking about, and it talks about, you know, connecting in, and it also doesn't discount the stories. Because a lot of folks will say, I don't read the stories, but they're just like, I mean, their stories are filled with a fellow member's life and how they had a transformation as a direct result of the actions that they took here. And sometimes when you're in a position where you can't get to a meeting, read a story. You know, read the grapevine. You know, we've got CDs and all that now, but they had just the stories. I mean, this was the way they transmitted the message. You know, it's their textbook. And so, and the forwards are so important because they talk about the growth of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know I watch glazed over eyes when I sit with a girl and go over it, you know, because they're just like, oh my God, reading all these numbers and all this stuff, you know, and I'm like, this really, really listen to what I'm saying. And they're like, oh my gosh, wow. You know, because it talks about even in the foreword of the first edition, it just says, many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we're sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. And it's not our way to quit drinking, but our way to learn to stay sober. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about. You know, even from the get-go, it's talking about. And I didn't know that the preamble came out of the foreword of the first edition, and I wouldn't have known that, but it did. And that's where the preamble comes from. And that's when they had Honest Desire in there, and then they removed it later because it's kind of, I mean, you can't, I mean, who's going, an Honest Desire to pick a white chip? I mean, Sammy was talking beautifully about lying. I mean, it was just second nature. You know, I did the same thing. You know, it's like, what does honest even mean? You know, and so they took that out, but that's where the preamble came from. And then if you move on to the second edition, that talks about AA's growth and how quickly it grew from 1939 to 1955. And that the traditions were formed, and thank God they were formed, because we probably would have been killing each other and we wouldn't be here. And those traditions are 12 beautiful principles that I know I have come to just use, as, you know, so much of my life and personally, as well as, you know, practicing in my group and a good sponsorship. You know, she showed me about the traditions. And if they sound like Chinese, get involved in service and they'll make sense. Because it's just like the steps. That sounded like Chinese till I got sober, and then I had somebody walk, you know, show me the way, and then it started to make sense, you know. And I didn't know what a lot of this stuff meant, and I still don't sometimes. I hope I'm always teachable, but you know, it shows the growth. I think it's important for us to know our history, and it's just it helps me feel more connected in. And then we move on, and then one difference from the first, you know, to the second. Forward to the second edition, this one thing they say, you know, that we have no monopoly. They say, upon therapy for the alcoholic itself, we surely have no monopoly. And so we're not saying we are the end all to all, but I know this is what works for me. And that's what the whole point in going through this book and going through the steps is connecting in, learning about the truth of my condition, and knowing that that's all I need to be worried about, is that it does work for me. You know, and that's all I can. And again, I'd say the same disclaimer. This is just my experience. I will never profess to be anything but just a girl that got sober in 1988 and is so daggone grateful. And some people ask her to come share with one of her good friends. And that's what we're doing. And that's it. So I would just encourage you, you know, to read maybe the forewords. If you never have, read them with a different attitude and different eyes. You know, to be connected in and to learn more, because there's a lot of history there. And you know, Sammy's talked a lot about, you know, describing, you know, alcoholics. And it's so key for me to know that it centers in my mind. You know, I carry meetings in the jails on Tuesday nights to the ladies, and we're going through the book. And it's been such a joy to watch them. And see, I don't have to tell them anything. All we're doing is going through the book and reading the book. And maybe explain what some words mean and tying some experience in with it. And they're saying things like, wow, I never knew that it centered in my mind. Or, oh my gosh, that's what that means. And so, I mean, that's the gift that we give folks. I know for me that, I mean, there's no way I could have stayed sober if I didn't understand the truth of my condition. If I didn't get about, you know, that it's a spiritual sickness, sure. But physically and mentally, and especially mentally, because I can quit drinking and... I still got problems because I am the problem. I used to have a thing on my mirror that said, "You're looking at the problem." I left it on. I've had it on my mirror for a long time when I first got sober, and then I had a sponsee that I felt like needed it more than I did, so I gave it to her. But I love the doctor's opinion. I mean, you know, it's best thing I could say is it made sense for me. You know, I knew for a long time that drinking just did something different to me than the people that I hung out with. And then they were gone, and it was still doing different stuff to me. And then when it gets to the point where I just can't stop, and it talks about losing the power of choice, you know, and the idea of choice is so important because I didn't. This put into words for me that I could not. It's mm-hmm. like when I first got here. You know, when I first got here, I had a spiritual awakening. I believe, you know, Bill Wilson talks about, and I bring this, I always talk about this because it's so important to me. And Language of the Heart, it talks about the greatest gift we get when we come here is a spiritual awakening. And that we must awake or we die. Mm-hmm. And that was what happened to me April 11th, 1988. It's like something was different when I woke up. It's almost like God lifted me up, and that's my higher power, lifted me up. And I knew that I just had a little window of time it's the first time in many years, and I've been begging him, and my life was out of control, and living with my parents for the umpteenth time with my three small children, ages 8, 7, and 5, and nobody was in my life except people that had to be, you know, and I'm just begging him, you know, God, and I'm drinking against my will, and I'm just, you know, totally powerless and not knowing that's what it was. And I had that awakening, and I went into a treatment center that night, actually St. John's, and I haven't had a drink since then, you know, April 12th, 1988 is my sobriety date. And I know that it's a power bigger than me, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But I know, I mean, that was my experience coming to you. You know, God brought me to you. You took me to God. I mean, that's really, you know, what I've always heard. And it's come through the years to really mean a lot more. You know, depth and weight is so huge. You know, the longer I'm here, the more things mean. And, you know, they can sound good. But that, you know, if I don't have any experience to go with it or experiences, it doesn't really mean a lot. But when I first got here, I was a willing soul because I was dying, you know, and I hooked in with a busy group and they showed me, you know, how to get busy in the fellowship like you talked about. I mean, in the beginning, I was just excited to wake up and want to be in the world. You know, because I'd wanted to die for so long and just crying all the time and dreading, is this going to be my life? I was 30 years old and thinking, this is it. It's over. I have to drink the rest of my life or die. And then I had that amazing awakening and went into St. John's. And when I, you know, got out of treatment, went to meetings every day because I lost my job. I'm still living with my parents, and I went to meetings every day. And I was very attracted to people that were speaking about a solution. And they were talking about this book. And so I started, and people, you know, they said, go to a big book study. And so I hooked in with people that did. And they did things, and like when we would read and talk about it. And it described me. And that's one thing you described me. Because you had been, you know, and I'm not saying you personally, I'm just saying you. You know, it was the language of the heart, little did I know. You're describing how I'm feeling inside, and I don't even know you. And that hooked me in because you were talking about being irritable, restless, and discontent. Or you were talking about the jaywalker or Jim, you know, the milk and, you know, and all the stories, you know, and more about alcoholism and the examples of, and even though they were so old, I got that. But I never would have, we were laughing, talking about, especially the story about Jim with the milk. I was reading that with the women the other night in the jail. And that's in More About Alcoholism for y'all. If anybody wants to know where it is, I'm sure you do. But, I mean, you know where it is. But laughing, thinking, you know, because we read it. And then I said, do y'all see anything funny about any of all that? And they were like, well, no. I said that he went to work Tuesday. You know, even just that was a little clue. What happened to Monday? And that he just had a little spat with his boss. I mean, he probably had a knockdown dragon. You know how we minimize and maximize. You know, I know I do. I minimize the stuff that's really big, and I maximize those few good things that might be there. It's that delusional thinking in my head, you know, because I'm really good at trying to convince you of my truth, and I'm usually the only one that would believe it. And I laugh now thinking about the things I used to try to convince people of. Mm-hmm. But just those kind of stories and how if someone hadn't have read that with me, I would never have gotten a lot of that. You know, and it made sense to me, you know, why he, you know, showing that relapse, you know, that thinking way before even picking it up, you know, justifying I think I'll stop in there and I'll probably find me somebody that can buy a car from me in a bar. Okay. Yeah, let's go to the bar and sell a car, you know, and I'll get some lunch because they have good food and I ate there once or twice, you know, and it's just, and I can remember countless times in my life where I would do those things and just the immediate justification and rationalization. And so these are the things that hooked me in. Bill's story, reading Bill's story and taking the first 8 pages and underlining what I, how I thought, drank, and felt, just like Bill. Because if I read it, just read it, I'd be going, okay. But if I really read Bill's story, man, I connected in. And him being a co-founder, that just made, that history stuff again, it just made me feel more a part of. And then seeing the solution happen when Abby came, and then how the steps and his spiritual awakening being immediate. And my sponsor telling me, you know, about the spiritual experience in the back, you know, Ayers is using an educational variety. It comes over time. It's over experiences that I have. That it's not, it had to be quick for him. He had a whole lot of people to save. Us. You know, I mean, he did. There were a whole lot of people needed to be saved. So it needed to be that way. But it's just, you know, but understanding the powerlessness and the unmanageability of my life, and the stories helped a lot with that. And also, additionally, with the, you know, the first step is the different types of alcoholics. You know, understanding the moderate drinker, the hard drinker, and the real alcoholic. You know, and like my father drank a lot, and but he was a hard drinker. Something happened, and he quit. Now look at him. You might have at one point in his life, but I mean, he was an executive. He had it together, but he liked to drink. But something happened with his health and he stopped. And it's like, huh, now that, I could not do that. Yeah, every now and then I could, like when I got pregnant. When I was young, I had 3 children in 5 years. By the time I was 25, I had 3 children. Each time I got pregnant, I could stop drinking and smoking cigarettes. I still could stop. Then for a good reason, I had a baby. I was going to have a baby. It was going to fix my life. It was a human power thing. You know, I was in a marriage. It wasn't working. We were young, and I thought, oh, the baby will fix it. You know, and it's still the outside trying to fix the inside stuff. I could stop then. But I immediately went back to it. Every time the baby's born, you know, because things are still not great at home, all of a sudden I realize, you know, well, I'm not thinking, oh, human power didn't fix it. But I'm thinking, you know, this isn't working. I still feel the way I did no matter what I do. I'm still not feeling well. Not realizing that I've got to tap into the inside. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that the inside, the answer was inside of me all along. But I'm thinking human power, and that's so huge that human power cannot save me. And for a lot of my life, I thought so. But I was powerless to the point where I've lost the power of choice. I've got, you know, and I'm talking, you know, listening to people describe it. And it was reassuring to my ears to know that I was in the right place and with people that got me, because you drank like me. Because I had, my alcoholism separates me from everything. I never felt connected into me, you, or God. I always felt a huge disconnect my whole life. And I was always creating loose ends everywhere I went. And I didn't understand why. I didn't get it. I didn't want to be like that. I can remember thinking that. I don't want to be like this. And I can't stop. Had no clue about losing the power of choice. Had no clue about it was in my mind, or the physical craving that was set off, or the different types of alcoholics. Maybe when I first started I was moderate, but I don't think so. I can remember drinking to get drunk from the get-go pretty much. I drank for the effect, and her book talks about that. You know, there's some really good descriptions of what an alcoholic is, and it's drinking for the effect. Well, like people that have inability to control their drinking, we've lost our legs, we'll never get them back. I mean, these are things that I understood. But the reason I understood them is that I was ready to hear them. Mm-hmm. You know, I was done. And if I'm not done, if somebody's not done, there's nothing you can say right. Okay. You know, and in an early sobriety boy, I try to talk into it. You know, and you're listening to me, you're going out and get drunk. Now I'm like, come back when you're ready. Because if you ain't done, you're not done. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll talk farther when we get into the 12th step about all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm just so grateful that that someone made sense of what was going on in my life. And it was from this book, and it was people that were involved in this that made sense of it. Because if they hadn't have, I don't know that I would have stayed. I mean, I already knew that something was off, but I, you know, having that awakening, and in another part of that reading, it says it must be followed by action or a person will drink again. And it showed examples of that. If you ever want to read Language of the Heart, it's beautiful. And we agnostics, I have always had a loving God in my life, but it was in my head. And I didn't realize that till I got sober. I was always begging God to help me. I never didn't believe God exists. And that's my higher power. And it may not be everybody. So please know that's mine. But it's the main thing is to just to have a high, just the power not be you. And to have a higher power. Something that you can believe in. And but I didn't realize, and it's just another thing that happened to me with, you know, step two is, and I was told step one's the problem, and step two is the solution, and step two is the hope step. And it's coming to believe the power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. Do I believe you? A simple way, my sponsor would say, do you believe me? Yeah. I mean, I was so open. Okay is like the most spiritual word you can say, like Sammy said. And so, but it wasn't, you know, and she said, do you have a loving God? I said, I believe in a loving God, but I have not tried to access that God because I wasn't living a life that was God-like. I hadn't for a long time. I'd done a lot of things that weren't okay, and they were against things I was raised around. And it talks about that. You can be around all that moral and philosophical galore stuff, and that's the spiritual good principles, and I was raised in a good family with good principles and shown by people how to live a good life and show up on time and be committed and do all the things that we do, and I couldn't do it to save my soul because I was just wired different. And so now I'm learning about me and how I'm wired, and not understanding the truth of my condition is, I can tell you, has helped me stay sober through the years, and it helps me help others understand theirs. And I think that's so key. If I do not get the truth of my condition, I will not stay sober. And when I talked about having, you know, a power greater than myself in my life and accessing that power, there's a few things in here that one thing I love is the second step choice. You know, God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? And I, you know, in the beginning, I was like, yes, man, he is it. I'm good. You know, and I was there. And I'm gung-ho. And most people that know me know I'm just like, yeah, I'm a very celebratory alcoholic, you know. And I love, you know, I love, because I'm so grateful to be alive, you know. But in through the years, you know, that was true. You know, yeah, I gave my alcoholism to him. And it's almost like, you know, you take the towel back and you piece by piece throw the stuff back in from your life. Because there was a point when I realized that I hadn't really given relationships to him. There was a point where I realized I hadn't really given him jobs that I was in, because I can see where I'm trying to control my life. And I'm a fantasy girl, and I still think I know what's best, you know. And so it's a process that God is everything or is nothing. What is my choice to be? That what it's telling me there is that I don't have to worry about it anymore. What's my choice? Time to move on, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. I love it, and it's plain and simple, but sometimes we're not plain and simple people. I know I'm not, you know, but what it was telling me, it also tells me in this chapter that deep down, and actually we were fooling ourselves on page 55, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other it is there for faith in a power greater than ourselves, and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man is himself. And you can go on to read that. And wow, it was in me the whole time. And I'm running around everywhere trying to fill the God-shaped hole up with everything I can, not even knowing it's in me the whole time. I believed it in my head, but it wasn't in my heart. Little, and I didn't know that through this process and the 12 steps, it would go from my head to my heart. In spite of me. In spite of me, I would get better. In spite of me. And all of a sudden, when I believed that, then things changed. You know, and I've heard some speakers say steps one and two are conclusion steps. I've heard people say when you get here, you've already done them. I mean, why would you be sitting in here if you weren't, didn't think you were powerless over alcohol in your life, unmanageable, just a little bit anyway, you know? And it's, I mean, it's whether you stick around, and that's why hearing hope and the solution in a meeting is so important for people. Then that's what my experience was. I heard that. I heard the people, and that's what got my attention and helped get me coming back. And but anyway, I'm not going to go on and on. We're going to take a break. I there's so much more. I think we'll go back to it as we share. And I just appreciate being with you, lovely people. I've got a minute. I want to tell you something funny. It's I usually drive the car when I travel because my husband, most people think that he doesn't have his license or I'm a control freak or something, but I'm really not. He has it. I get car sick really easy. So I'm riding with Sammy down here and I'm like getting sicker and sicker to my stomach. And we were trying to find a Starbucks and it was hysterical.
Lord have mercy, find the Starbucks.
Riding everywhere. And people would be saying, well, I think it's down there. We say, all right, bye. You know, because but the funniest part was the daggone, what's that lady's name on your Garmin or whatever? She kept going, recalculating. It's hysterical. Anyway, I thought you might get a, you know, I still drink for the effect. I mean, I think it's my green tea lemonade is gonna make me feel better. So, because that's a huge one that I relate to in this book, and they, you know, drinking for the effect. Yep, that's me. How many times do we say, let's go out and get drunk tonight? Yep. But anyway, it's great to be with y'all, and what a joy to talk about a process that saved my life and gave me a life and transformed my life and helped me just be one of many. And so we'll take a break. Thanks.
All right.
I don't know what the hell I was going to
talk about. That was awesome.
Thank you. I just used the book like you did.
Break, but before we do that,
I said I used the book just like you did.
And mm-hmm. We're going to ask
and then the rest is easy. 3 to 21 easy. Oh, these are the only ones.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jake. I'm an alcoholic.
Jake!
In 3 weeks, we're going to have something down at the Ocean Front. It's called Fisky Pod. Virginia State Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. There's only 2 qualifying questions I have for people. 1, you have to work on your health. 2, are you enthusiastic about your sobriety?
I can tell you've done
it. And I suggest that both those questions you definitely qualify to be down there. I have registration forms. $25 to register for you down at the conference.
I was like staring at him, was like, oh, that's good. And you said so many things that I'm like, oh,
I'm here, Dave's here, the guy's going, this guy right here is going. If you have any questions, come talk to us.
Okay, do we have any other announcements tonight?
Read the book.
Donna.
That's my announcement.
Donna.
Okay, thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Guy, and my home group is Dominary Sober. We have a workshop coming up next Saturday, Wednesday, Tuesday, May 17th. 1 week tomorrow, actually. From 11 to 2 at Upper United Methodist Church, we have 4 guest speakers, ranging in sobriety from 10 years to 16 years, and then we'll be a potluck with bacon.
Bacon. Thanks. All right, Donald, do you want to announce your anniversary?
I'm Donald, an alcoholic. West Gibbs had its 34th anniversary. It will be held on June 25th. Dinner starts at 6. We'll provide the dinner. You can bring a dessert or a salad and break. Speaker starts at 8, and it's Linda T. from Tampa.
June 25th. So just so we can get to know you, if you're in the room tonight and you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, would you like to introduce yourself by your first name? Anybody? Anybody with 30 days or less tonight?
30 days.
David. Welcome.
My name's Kristen, and I'm an alcoholic.
Kristen, welcome.
Tyrone, I'm an alcoholic.
Tyrone, welcome.
Welcome.
My name is James, I'm an alcoholic.
James, welcome.
Okay. All right, we'll take a 15-minute break, and we'll come back and have the 3rd and 4 steps.
Whee!
It's quick talking.
Yeah, I mean,
I like it. Yeah, it's quick.
Yeah, and it's quick. And you know, we leave out so much that I want to just say everything we can.